everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. I was in a place recently, and I was just felt so comfortable. And I said, what is it that leads to this feeling of comfort? And I thought about the beginning of animals and where we came to be and how we evolved. And I thought, you know, here's a choice now. We could be living in caves. Animals cannot live in caves alone. They have to go out. Because if they live in caves, because caves are safe. I mean, caves are relatively safe. You could see what's coming in your front door. But what do you eat? Bats, mice, snakes. It's cold in there. You don't get any vitamin D. You know, it's hanging out in a cave is an okay existence. And many of you, I know, practically live in caves. Some people like to be down in the basement a lot. Some people like to be very private, closed off. Shades drawn, cave dwellers. It's okay. It's one way to be. But most of humanity decided that it had to be pretty smart to get out there and find something else. Because in order for a brain to develop, it needs diversity. It needs creativity. It needs find different things. And how is nature going to motivate you to develop your brain and your body and other parts of you? It says you've got to find food outside the cave. It says cave food isn't good enough. So it sends you out there and it says, go get some nuts and seeds that grow only outside. Go eat some meat. You know, go do some stuff, but get outside the cave. So it sends you outside the cave, all of us. Many of you, I know, felt this way when you were growing up. When you sent to school for the first time, did you ever get the feeling your mom threw you out of the cave and said, yeah, you got to go there. You got to mix with the other animals now. Now you got to mix with the other animals. Why? Why do you have to mix? Why do you have to be social? Well, the way that they built these humans, where humans had no major weapons. We didn't have good teeth. We didn't have good fingernails. We didn't have claws. We didn't have great speed. We didn't have anything. But what we had was we had a pack. We had communication. We had the ability to work with each other to get things done. So if something was chasing us, you know, we could yell out to each other, all right, you go that way and I'll go this way, and we'll see what we could do, or we'll figure out a way, or they'll yell, hey, he's coming to get us. But there were ways that we used through communication to help ourselves out there on the tundra when we came out of the caves. Why? We're talking about this because we're talking about feelings inside you. The other thing that they decided that nature figured out was that if you have somebody who's living in your cave since you're born as your mate, your genes aren't going to change very much if you're just mating with somebody who's your relative, right? Because if they're in the cave, they've got to be a relative of yours in some way. And nature says, you know, the immune system doesn't work this way. Immunity is a system that builds according to the environment. And what we want it to do is we want your immunity to keep growing. And the way we want it to grow is we want you to mate with someone whose gene pool is somewhat like yours, but slightly different. So if you're a Cro-Magnon man, and you go out there, you're not going to try to mate with a zebra, but you're going to find a Cro-Magnon woman, but she might come from a different neighborhood, a different gene pool, and that's going to be attractive to you on some level, as well as she might be cute, if there were any cute Cro-Magnon people. I think there were. But you find a mate. You go look for a mate. So you want a mate. And then you want food. And these two things, finding a mate and finding food, is what we do with most of our lives nowadays, right? Earning a salary is finding food. Bringing home the bacon. Eating out is finding food. You know, you go over to the monkey's house and you see what he's having for dinner, right? Or you'll go to a fair. I'm sure, you know, we never envisioned McDonald's, but there's, you know, fast food, going out there and finding whatever's available. Like some animals eat other animals' food. Kind of makes sense, you know. A hyena will chase off a fox because the fox caught something the hyena wants to eat because it's bigger. So you eat some, you know, you eat, that's fast food, eating somebody else's food. We also have a very strong need for our brains to grow. Grow in a way that that expands the size and the ability of our brains. So we need stimulation. So the disadvantage of being in a cave is that genetically you would die out, right? Easily, because you'd be inbreeding. You'd be limited with your food and the nutrition that you'd be eating. You'd be eating dark food. You know, you'd be eating food that you don't have any vitamin D. You have very little photosynthesis. You know, you're eating stuff that grows in caves. Moss. You know, moss sandwich, moss soup, moss. You get tired of moss after a while. But you got to learn new tricks. Did you ever hear about the dog? An old dog was sitting one day in the jungle, and he's sitting in the jungle, and he's just wandering around. What's an old dog doing in the jungle? We're not even going to mention this. The dog's in the jungle. And a leopard sees him, and the leopard says, I think I'll have that dog for lunch. And the dog sees him, but he's a wise old dog, so he says to himself, I know what I'll do. And he runs over to a pile of bones, and he picks up a bone that he sees, and he makes believe he's eating it, and he says out loud, boy, this leopard really tastes good. I hope I have another one soon. The leopard, seeing him eating these bones, stops short and says, boy, am I glad I got here in time, and I saw this, because he's a dog eating, a leopard eating dog. I don't want to go near him, and the leopard runs away. A monkey up in the tree sees this going on, and he determines that he's going to get into the leopard's favor by telling the leopard that it was all a trick. So he runs down and tells the leopard, and the leopard says, oh, he gets disgusted. He's going to go back and eat the dog. The dog, having noticed the leopard in the tree and the monkey in the tree and what the monkey might be doing, the dog figured it out. When he sees the monkey come running back on the back of the leopard, the dog says out loud, I wonder what happened to that monkey that I sent out to get me another leopard. See, we develop brains to survive. Old dogs can sometimes survive young leopards. Home. You build your own cave after a while. What happens to you? You begin to realize that if you're out in the tundra, you're out there on the savannah, and you go pick up, you know, some girl at a dance, right? And you say, hey, want to be my mate? Look, I could bring home some good food. And she says, okay, I'll be your mate. Let's start a family. And the two of you start a family, and now you look for a local cave. But there's not many caves out there in the savannah. So you say, we'll build a cave. We're going to put on, you know, we're going to get some twigs, and we're going to put on some leaves, and we're going to put it over our heads. And we build a cave. And we put this cave, and we're going to live inside this cave that is now called a home, that is outside there on the land. Now, of course, what is the primary reason to have built this shelter? The primary reason to build the shelter is because you're afraid of the elements. You see, when back then, elements were a disaster. They were worse than even a lion or a tiger coming after you. Rainfall could drown you. You know, there could be so much rain, you could get drowned in the rain. You couldn't breathe. If you were outdoors in rainfall, as sometimes birds are, you just drown. There's not enough space in between the raindrops to breathe. Or there could be an absence of rain. And the absence of rain is you could dry up to death. You can't find any water. You dehydrate. Or it could be the sun beating down on you. You know, it's not so bad if you have a shelter over your head. Or it could be a windstorm. you know, you could protect yourself from some wind. So mainly the protection was from the elements at the beginning. At the very beginning, my friends, we built homes to protect ourselves from the elements. And that's why when you're at your, you ever get the feeling when you come in from the rain and you get into your apartment or your home and you close the door and you get this feeling after coming in with your umbrella soaking wet, you go, shoo. It's that feeling. It's that feeling. So, what is home? It's a good question. Is home where you feel safe? Is home where you feel safe? Is that the main feeling of it? Is the main feeling that you want to just get to a place where you feel safe? Is that the only part of it? So home has two major elements to it. One is home is wherever love is. I knew a man who lived with a woman, and they were living in a home. And this home that they lived in the home that they lived in was kind of chaotic because the couple disliked each other. And they really disliked each other. They disliked each other so much that every time he came home or she came home, they were at odds with each other. So home was never home. In fact, they made changes in the home that would satisfy one or the other of them, but it would never satisfy both. So what you would do is you would be going to this place that you would expect to be home, but you'd close the door, but the minute your mate showed up and you wouldn't feel good about it, it was no longer home. So this friend of mine told me the story about how when he finally broke up with his mate and he found his own place, in his own place, he felt fine. He could remember having that feeling of coming home again. There's another man I knew who was living with someone, and he was having a lot of disharmony with that person. That person decided to leave him, and she went off to Europe. And he remembered the day the door was shut and how much better he felt, because this feeling of home, this feeling of being at a place where you could feel the kind of safety, is so essential. Do you have it? Do you have it? Do you have a place? Do you have a room? Do you have a place you can go that's a place for you? This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. So home was and is a place where you find shelter, and home is a place where you find safety. But home is also a place where you find love. A couple I knew, one of the people in the couple said, when I am with my lover in my lover's place, which is a really poor living place, I feel comfort, I feel relaxed, I feel at home. When I'm in my own place, because my lover is not there, I don't feel that. So home becomes a place where you feel two things, love and safety. Love could be any one of many forms. Love could be your animals. It could be your pets. It could be your cats. It could be your goldfish. I spoke to someone recently who told me that she was walking by the side of the road and she was feeling pretty alienated from the world. And she found she bought a large bowl. And she went and she bought two goldfish and she gave them names. And what she did for herself when she spotted that bowl, she said, that's going to help me feel better. And she was right. She's now living with something. Plants make you feel that way. I'm a real plant lover. I really believe that having stuff around you that's growing and living is kind of essential for a wonderful feeling. I couldn't imagine living without nature somewhere immediately around me. What about you, friends? Do you get that feeling? Did you ever notice when you lost that feeling? when you come home. Now, there's another thing that you could do, of course. You could be living alone and not have anybody living there, but you have memories. Nowadays, people have their computers, you know, and they have contact through computers. But that's not much contact, but I guess it does work. You know, I see enough teenage people doing Facebook all day long that I wonder if they're not building a society of some sort that way, but not having the contact. I'm not sure about that. You know, maybe this is just the new way. Maybe Facebook is the new way of going out, because play seems to have been the obvious way that people would make contact. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. So I want to talk to you about your sense of home. 212-209-2900. We'll be taking your calls in just a little bit, my friends. Let me talk to you about something else while I'm at it. Let's talk about play. See, nature's other thing, it gives us play. Play is important. Most adults are neither able to play nor even understand what play is. They may have many activities, hobbies, recreations, interests, but they do not play. Even when they do not run as children do. They run for exercise. They run, well, they are working at running. They spend money, time, and energy working at recreation. They go to gyms and they work at doing treadmills. But it's not play. Consequently, they are not recreated. Recreation is the word. They're not recreated because they're always just repeating the same thing. So play is to create. Tom Malone, a PhD and MD, and his son Pat Malone, they argue that whimsical essence of play is also the essence of intimacy, and that too many adults have lost the ability both to play and to be intimate. Adults will go from activity to activity in search of play, just as they will go from person to person for their quest for intimacy. Unlike children who will play, fight, and then freely play again, adults end up in chronic low-level struggling that eventually replaces play and destroys intimacy. They compete. You know what I mean? The game that you're playing becomes more than a game. The game becomes a competition. It becomes a whole different story. Can an adult rediscover play? The first step is a spiritual one. People must surrender their specialness. The idea that your problem is unique, special, worse than others, takes you out of playing. Because when you play, you're all alike. See, the kids are equal. And the kids play alike. If one plays harder than everybody else and always wins, it's no longer a play. Because you abandon winning. You abandon losing. It's only a game. When you play baseball, many of you know that, you play baseball for the game of it. It doesn't matter. You're just playing baseball. It's fun. You could drop the ball. You could throw the ball. You could make a mess out of it. You could miss it. It's just play. When you strike up teams, and then it becomes important, it's no longer play. So when you give up your need to win and you enjoy the game, you give up your need to be first and you enjoy just being, give up your need to be in control and you just enjoy the other people. That's the essence of play. Play is one of our best ways to develop our minds. Play is one of the best ways that we have of stretching ourselves, of bringing us to a different kind of reality. Our telephone number here is 212-209-2900. We're going to be taking your calls in just a couple of minutes. I want to talk to you about home and your need for variation and your desire to play. 212-209-2900. In fact, if there's anybody on the line right now, Michael, I think we will take someone. Hi there, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille. Okay, 212-209-2900. What happens to you in your home? What happened to you? Did you And if you need to call me about the animals and the color, this calls are still coming in. We'll talk a little bit more about play. By the way, here's a new backlash. Two pieces of information. We just found that Farrah Fawcett, Major Farrah Fawcett, just died. Sorry to say. A noble battle that she put up. But speaking of women, one of the major pieces of research that we just received is that there are bullies now, that there is a new form, a new turn. Men who are so quickly pointed out to be the bullies at work and are so careful about being bullies have now been gone in the background. And a recent study pointed out that the primary number of bullies available at work are women being bullies to other women. And this thing goes unchecked because you can't really go to human resources about it. You know, if a man is bullying a woman, you can. If a man is bullying a man, you could try. But when a woman bullies a woman, once a woman gets into that position where she could really be aggressive and negative, you've got a hard case to fight. So some of the recent studies by a couple of psychiatrists have, psychologists, have uncovered that there is some new phenomenon called bullying at work that is being focused mainly on the woman who's in authority. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand. How are you doing this afternoon?
Good.
I just had to call in because everything you're talking about, I had the an all-encompassing experience. I just got back from my niece's wedding in Wisconsin, and I'm an East Coast guy, and I'm used to the tension of the East Coast attitude, even at gatherings where people should be enjoying themselves or relaxing and even playing. And out there in Wisconsin, a bunch of the Midwesterners just grabbed, like, wiffle balls and frisbees and makeshift volleyballs, and they just started putting all this stuff outside the wedding, after the wedding. And people in the Midwest, they just start grabbing stuff and playing, and it's like grown-ups and kids. And all my East Coast relatives were all inside trying to tell each other what to do and criticizing how the tables were set up. And all the Midwesterners were outside just like, oh, if you need any help, give me a call or give me a hoot. And, you know, if you want to come out here, we got some more wiffle balls and baseball gloves. And it was just amazing to experience the diversity of people that refused, the grown-ups that refused to play and had to stay very on task, and then the adults that were just enjoying everybody, and how much of a different experience it was for all of us.
What did you feel? I mean, what did you feel on the inside, especially with the spoil sports?
Well, the thing is, I'm coming from a pretty dysfunctional family and lost my mom last year, and there's a big rift between me and my siblings and I about, you know, who has rights to certain properties, and they were out there. And some other family members knew about this riff, and they were surprised they even showed up because of that. And I said, no, I'm out here for my niece's wedding. It's her thing. I know her friends are really nice. And I just felt like it was great for me. I got away from my environment. I got out to a new place and met a whole bunch of my relatives that are Midwesterners that are a lot more relaxed and you know, forgiving and understanding of other people's quirkiness. So for me, it was a just tremendous, wonderful break away from the family, from my own environment and its issues, and to reconnect to a larger family.
And the seriousness of the loss of your mother. I mean, that was a pretty heavy thing that happened last year.
Yeah, and the saddest thing about it is my mother had a beautiful side, and she had a really messed up side, and she wouldn't talk about her past or her family at all for me to ever try to understand what her issues were, because she could be so nice and nurturing one minute and so horrible the next. And my sister's become a recreation of her, and that's the losing my mom was hard enough, but you know, she suffered from cancer, and when she died I felt relief. But my sister has taken all that my mother was, that I used to have to cope with, and I'm re-coping with it through her, and I'm refusing.
Well, that's kind of an interesting thing that happens quite frequently. The way that your sister is dealing with her grief is by incorporating your mother into her personality, and I've seen that happen many times. in a funny way, the way you react to it is kind of the way you reacted to your mother. You just back away, right?
Yeah. There's,
now, so here's the problem that we have. What's your name?
Oh, Frank.
Frank, the problem we have is that what I'm hearing about you is you're a very sensitive man and that you've never been comfortable with true confrontation or real anger. And that part of you that wants to get away from it does not, I mean, that's why you get stuck with your sister.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I grew up, you know, in my life experience, I've seen and experienced a lot of violence and negativity and some really ugly sides of life and in and outside of my family. And I'm 57 years old now, and I'm really, you know, I really try to keep my antenna up to take care of myself and to stay away too much from negativity. And
do you have a primary relationship in your life?
No, just close friendships. No,
but why not? No,
watch
this English. Why not? No love.
Why not? Because there is a lot of love in my life, actually.
And how about a romance?
Not for the last 5 years.
Yeah. So now let's get down to that, right? Mm-hmm. You have no romance for 5 years, and one of the things you do is you keep your guard up to make sure you don't get involved in much negativity.
Absolutely.
And part of the problem with getting into a relationship is you got to deal with the negativity somewhere in there. You get two animals, you put them in the same cave, they're eventually going to bump into each other, or one's going to grow past the other one. And if you're not equipped to deal with the changes that take place and the individual needs that evolve in each person, you just gotta say, I gotta stay away from it. You're 57 years old, and I'll bet you're cute. And you're staying away from, you're not letting somebody have access to the beauty of you.
You know what? I try to make the most out of my very good, close friends. Even my first love, my high school sweetheart, we start dating at 15 all the way through high school. She is my best friend. We know each other so intimately, and I have a couple other friends, really close, good friends, and even though I'm missing that romantic, special someone, I got some very special someone.
Absolutely, that's very special. I'm just thinking that 57-year-old, you started at 52, was your last romance, and because you couldn't deal with the anger that you had with your last mate, you decided to just give up relationships. And it was about anger again. It was the same issue you had with your mother, same issue you had with your sister. Same issue you had with love. So, Frank, we need your genes.
I told my relatives I have absolutely no regrets about where I am right now. I said, but, you know, and I don't have my namesake out there, and I'm only two of the last males to carry my namesake out. I said, I better clone or something. I'll tell you something.
It's not so much that you have to do it by having a child, because I think some people who have children are conscienceless. They're not even thinking. And they're bringing more trouble into the world than they are giving something to the world. You know, so I think you have to think about that. But I do think that you, in a loving space, would provide a different energy for people in general. So I say, dear Frank, you've got to deal with your anger and learn to deal with it in a different kind of way and open up the doors to your cave. You'll be amazed at what happens.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a shot. It's pretty wide open, but I know I keep my foot, you know, in that last crack of it and that closest someone, because I had some real ugly closest someone. I had beautiful one experiences with women, and I had some of the most horrifying.
And they're only horrifying when you can't express your anger and talk about it when you need to.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Stay in touch with me, Frank. Send me an email. We'll talk more about it.
Yeah, well, it's good to hear you, and keep up the good work, Armand. I appreciate you every day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Now you learn. 212-20. Nope, we can't take any more calls. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, a little music for you about cave dwellers.
Greetings, this is Savion Glover, and you're listening to WBAI, listener-supported, non-commercial radio in New York. Enjoy.
Hi, this is Lloyd Price, and you're tuned to WBAI New York. Listener-supported, non-commercial radio.
Okay.
Oh, no, Lord, 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 Miss Gordon.
You keep going your way, I'll keep going my way. River, stay away from my door. I just got a cabin. You don't need my cabin. River, stay away from my door. Don't come up any higher. I'm so all alone. Leave my bed and my fire. That's all I own. I ain't breaking your heart. Don't start breaking my heart. River, stay away from my door.
Jimmy Rushing with Dave Brubeck, no less. River, stay away from my door, just like Frank was saying. hey, you know, don't come messing up my door. You know, I'm fine in my little cabin. I don't want to have any river coming in here and coming through my place and wrecking it. But it's a problem. I mean, many people take to solitude at the as they get on in years. And I don't blame you one bit. I could really think, I could see most women and men I know who've given up on relationships, they just say, not enough energy left for that. I can understand that. But there is something about love. Something about it that makes all the difference in the world. So even if you don't have that love with a person, you know, if you have it with a cat or a dog, or you have it somewhere inside, but you're not completely alone, makes a big difference. Telephone number here, 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. We're talking about the sense of home and where you find home. Let's take another one of your calls. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, sir. Hi,
hello,
Armand.
Hello, sir.
How you doing?
Hi there.
It's been a while. How are you, sir?
Who is this?
John.
Hello, John.
I visited once.
Hi, John.
How you doing?
Good to hear you.
Thank you. Listen, it was a funny thing that I was calling about the play part. Because
yeah.
It used to be such a big part of my life. Not so much in college, but, you know, high school and when you had so many more friends and, a little bit in college, not that much, but, I used to love to, you know, dance, and lately I've just been thinking to myself, well, I can't even really remember what to do to have fun anymore. You know? I'm
it's
like,
tough.
Well, what do
it's
I do?
It's you know, wait the last time you heard people laughing real, real hard.
Oh, you know, man.
When have you laughed hard?
Well, you know, I it does happen occasionally, but, you know, it's got to be something really silly, like a movie or a sitcom or something that really makes me bust a gut every now and again. But when I was together with people and did that was maybe about a year ago at my last birthday party.
Yeah, well, great. Your birthday party. Party for you.
Yeah, it was party for me.
Yeah. See, so now you're surrounded by love at your party. If it's a party for you, love is all around you.
Yeah.
Now, when love is all around you, you can allow yourself to step into the child you. The child you has more access to play than the grown-up you.
Yeah.
So when you have people loving you, right, John? When people are saying, hey, John, we want to honor you in some way. You've got so much room in there.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is.
If you wanted to lick the cake with your finger, it would have been okay.
Totally okay. I didn't have anything to worry about.
It was your cake, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And when you have nothing to worry about, laughter and play is very available.
Yeah.
So you're saying something important. You're saying something about trust. And that play is something that you do when you feel safe. And here's the beauty of it. You bring up another important point, and thank you for mentioning it. Play is something we've always did as kids when our parents were watching and taking care of us.
Yeah.
When they were protecting the neighborhood, when they were off covering the periphery, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean,
or my siblings, because I'm the last child.
Or even siblings, sure.
So I had bigger brothers and sisters all the time.
Yeah, so in some way they got an eye out for you.
Yes.
You know, but you're a rabbit out there, and you're trying to play out there, and there's a hawk that's looking down at you. And you see that shadow coming, you know, another rabbit, a wise one's going to say, watch out for that shadow coming in your direction. And that play quickly turns into, let's get out of here.
Yeah.
You know? So one of the things about play is feeling protected. And unfortunately, it is very hard for people to feel protected. It's like very often if you get silly in a restaurant, you know, and I've done it.
Mm-hmm.
You start laughing in a restaurant, you just can't stop it. And I'm aware, what effect is this having on the people around me? The people around me are not too comfortable with this. I better not carry this on too far. You know?
But why? But lately, I feel like I feel so much like I want to have fun. I want to play, though. You know, but I don't know how to do it anymore.
Yeah, I understand. So it says you got to give up your importance. See, the whole trick that we get into is the need of feeling important. The place where we really enjoy the game is when we give up our need to win. We give up our need to be first. We just want to be. And I think it becomes a very important thing when it's just a matter of being. That's why I think playing with animals is just fun. Do you have any animals around you?
No.
What about it?
I don't like animals because I don't want to take care of them.
I understand. See, so John, what I'm hearing is you are somebody who has been caught in adolescence, you know, most of your life, and now you want to rediscover your childhood. Who blames you? Who blames you?
Yeah.
But, you know, I'll tell you, sounds like it might be a good idea to you to find something to take care of.
Okay.
Sounds like it might be a good idea for you to get something that's equal. Don't get something too small. Get something big enough. Because what's the worst part of taking care of something? You ask the neighbor to take care of them?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
It might change it for you. Because see, I could tell you something. If you've never played with a dog, it's amazing. It opens up your whole world and everybody joins you.
Well, that's an interesting idea. Okay. I want to consider that.
A big dog. Not a little dog. No schnauzer.
Like a boxer or something.
Yeah, like even a, yeah, or a lab or something like that. Or a
big dog. Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, or a mountain dog. Burmese mountain dog. They're about as big as an elephant. Right? You play with them and they kind of smile.
That sounds like a lot of, just listening to it makes me feel happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Thanks for calling
okay.
me, John.
Thanks, Armand.
Sure. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Responsible animal ownership, my friends. Not just go get a pet. There's plenty of pets out there that need friends. You know, kind of waiting over at the shelters and taking care of them is a beautiful thing. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, my name is Rachel.
Hello, Rachel. Thank you for giving me your name.
I think your show is great. Always I listen to it. And I'm always full with happiness. I'm always happy, and I like jokes a lot.
You like jokes a lot?
Yes.
Did you like my dog joke?
Yeah.
Not
you didn't
a
tell a dog joke, did you?
I
must have been on standby. I'm sorry.
It was a joke.
Oh, it was a joke? It wasn't.
Do you have a favorite clean joke that you tell?
No, not really.
You don't.
I just like to laugh a lot. I like funny things. I like little skits and little situations. And one time I remember I got locked inside of a door in Italy and couldn't get out.
You got locked inside a door.
Right, I got locked inside of a door and couldn't get out. The door.
You mean locked inside of a room with a door, right? And you couldn't get out of the room?
Right, I couldn't get out of the bathroom.
The bathroom, oh, that's
yeah.
funny.
And it was really funny to me because I was going to an audition and my makeup was sweating and there was no air conditioning. I thought it was funny.
So you have an eye for that in nature, which is kind of weird. You know what I mean? The nature itself, and not only nature, but situations, you can't really take them all that seriously.
Right.
And sometimes, everything looks so serious. And it's all there at once. Like I had that happen to me. It was like everything happening at once. And I said to myself, I don't want to be like this. I don't want to be taking it seriously. And it's not far from that.
Right.
The way you could laugh at yourself.
Yeah, I laugh at myself a lot because I think life is a little too short. And I think if you're too serious, you miss it.
Well, Rachel, you got a decent gift for yourself. Nice to have.
Oh, thank you.
Hey, do you have any children?
No, I have none, but I'm from a big family. I'm a middle child of seven. I'm the middle child, middle girl, middle of the month.
Man, and so you must keep other people going.
Yeah, I do.
Great, Rachel. Thank you so much for calling in.
And thank you for being around.
Sure. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. I like jokes, too. You could always send me a joke on, email, armand@thepositivemind.com. And if it's a goodie, I'll read it on the air. But it's got to make me laugh first. 212-209-2900. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hello, Armand. Good afternoon. This is Mary calling.
Hi, Mary.
I love your program. That's what I wanted to say first of all.
Thank you.
And Armand, I want to tell you that I work with second graders. I teach.
Yes.
And so play for me is an integral part of the day. But I have to say that there's a lot of kids that I see in the last bunch of years that are coming through that don't have that sense of play anymore.
Oh, you see it getting lost.
Yes, it's very much lost. Unless they're directed, unless it's organized, there is almost no more time for them to play, and it's really sort of a sad thing. And
well,
I noticed what
okay,
you're saying.
Okay, and this could be all the preparation that we're giving to these kids.
Yes.
You know what I mean? I mean, just think about what's happened to play in a playground. When I was a kid, there were monkey bars.
Right.
And monkey bars were great, but you fell off the monkey bar, boy, you could crack your skull, but it wouldn't be that serious. You know, you'd hurt your knee, you'd scrape it. Now they took the monkey bars away.
Right.
Now every playground has a rubberized bottom.
Right.
Right? So you can kind of bounce off it.
Mm-hmm.
Risk is not there. There's nothing to learn. Everything is kind of protected around you. Then you don't even get, you know, they're planning on how you're going to get into Harvard by the time you're 1 year old.
Oh, this is so true. So, that's really another whole subject, but that's very true. And interesting enough, Armand, is I noticed that there's a lot of kids that are coming through. When you talk about play before, you said it was a sense of just enjoying the moment of being there. There's so many more kids coming through now that I have to help overcome having to be first, competitive, or always being the center of attention. And there's very few children often that I see that can just enjoy the moment and be there for what it is.
Yeah, so what happens to you with that? What do you do with them?
I guess I have a general pull towards most of these kids. I go out with most of them as well during their recess time, which, by the way, in most grade schools is gone by grade two. And a lot of those kids I have to help. They don't know how to
recess
get on a swing.
Is gone
they don't know how to join
two.
A group. They don't
back
know how
me
to
up on that one. Hold on a second, Rachel. Oh, what's your name?
Mary.
Mary.
Mm-hmm.
Mary, recess is gone by age two?
No, by grade two, not
by
age
grade
two.
Two?
Oh, please.
What happened to recess?
Grade two? Well, there's no time. There is no time
oh,
for recess.
Oh, no.
The third, fourth, and fifth grades in our area, it's a highly, you know, it's a competitive town in New Jersey, and they very rarely in the upper grades make time for those kids to go out. And I'm one of the few people, I'm sort of the brunt of a joke at school, that I go out almost any kind of weather unless it's really extremely cold or terribly rainy.
So
because I feel they need that time to be out there together to learn how to play and be confident with themselves and with each other.
And variation, you see. And your mind has to be able to deal with flexibility and to find new things.
Mm-hmm.
If everything is defined and every class is a ritual, I just want to hold, I'm going to turn over to Stephanie Dombra here for a minute. Stephanie, give me a minute of time, would you? You know enough about children and child rearing. What do you think about this thing that Mary tells us about? Because it's...
I really am shocked.
Recess
I've
is
never
gone
heard
by two.
This.
Yes.
Second grade?
Mm-hmm. In our kindergarten, we have a half a day kindergarten. There is no time for recess. They do not go out.
Wow. Yeah,
what's the implication
here?
What's the implication, though?
Well, that downtime where it's not structured and they can figure out things and play.
Why'd they take it away?
Why would they take it
away?
Yeah,
that's what I'm asking you. Why would they take it away? Is it that the parents want to have every minute count?
It could be. The parents might have the influence in that particular school district.
Maybe
I'd also like to say that, could I just interrupt for a second?
Sure, please.
Also definitely the district itself. They have given so many more requirements, so many things more to fill, the No Child Left Behind, don't get me started on that, has created so much more paperwork and things that we must account for that there is no time left.
So there's also the liability issue. You see, there's this liability issue that the schools are worried about. I don't want to be accused. I don't want to be pointed out as having been somebody who let a child play and he was kind of abducted or let a child outside and it wasn't being watched.
Right.
You know, the requirements are so enormous.
It is, Armand. And so many of our parents that I see coming through in the last bunch of years are scared parents. Just here to let their kids literally get off the bus, walk around the side of the building, a first or second grader, and go in by themselves. They want someone to walk them in. You're putting a safety net around kids where, like exactly what you said, Stephanie, doesn't allow them to explore and enjoy each other. Many of the kids come in with sort of a I had a couple of kids over the years that come in with sort of what I call an Eeyore personality, their heads down, hands in pocket, thanks for noticing me type of thing. And you really have to work with some of them to get them to open up and enjoy just the spirit of moment and play.
So you understand that in an environment and in a culture built around fear, it is very hard to have a tiger. You know, you can only have the Eeyores.
Yes.
Because that's what they're going to come in. They're going to come in built with fear. And I can't criticize it, because I could also understand the parents motivated by fear, afraid of what could happen, terrified of losing what they have.
Right.
The culture, you know, and encouraging it, the newspapers, and the violence that we're seeing around. So it's a very funny thing. What part of the world are you in? What part of New Jersey?
I'm in Ridgewood, New Jersey.
Yeah. Are you in New Jersey?
Yes, Ridgewood, New Jersey. Mm-hmm.
And is there violence in the neighborhood?
No, there is not.
Yeah,
I
didn't think so. So I've seen that happen, too, in a lot of other schools, where it's almost as if, you know, almost as if we were part of that world.
Yes.
So we become more frightened than we should be because we're not part of it. If we were part of it, we would be appropriately frightened.
Yes,
but if we're not a part of it, we've got to build steel walls around ourselves.
Exactly. Exactly. That's very, very true in our mind.
So
thank
you're
you.
Such a nice person. I mean, where did they find you?
That's awful nice of you to say that.
No, Mary, really. I mean, look at you, loving children, working in a place where you really are concerned, trying to encourage kids to have the freedom.
Right. That's what I really try to do sort of every day. And I am in the world's luckiest job because I do get to play every day. In my classroom, out of the classroom, play around with the other teachers. It's a wonderful thing.
Well,
if you
how do you
do
play
that.
With the other teachers?
A smile as you walk down the hall, maybe a little funny note over the email. And I have the aides that come out with some of the other aides that come out with me as well, and I'll ask them to join in the games and play with the kids with me as well. So we all try to get a healthy dose of a little bit of fun here and there.
Great for us. Great for us, and thank you so much for calling.
Thank you, Armand, for speaking.
It's
have a wonderful
pleasure.
Day.
My pleasure. Well, Mary teaches us quite a bit. Mary teaches us about the culture and what's happening with the culture out there. It teaches us about our kind of our home again, our idea of home. Now, you have to take a child and you have to send the child to school, but you want to build walls around the child so that the child could be safe. And we keep protecting and protecting and protecting. And, of course, how could we not, by protecting as much as we are, how could we not eventually wind up with Eeyores? You know, the Eeyore syndrome. I like that. I like that very much. Mary, I think you're pointing to something. I say to most people out there that if you've got a home, a place you live, make it your home. Make it your safe place. Most men who get out of a marriage, it's kind of a funny thing when I see men who leave their marriages and they leave their homes. You could always ask them, do you have anything hanging on the wall? And they say, no, not yet. And they have almost everything on the floors, but nothing hangs on the walls. You make a place yours when you hang something on the wall. You know, and most men I know, when they're alone, they don't have a home. They don't have a place. They don't create beauty for themselves. They don't create it. It becomes a functional place. It's almost as if the heart always belongs to the mate and not, you're not allowed to have it on your own. So I think whatever you do, anything living in your space should be shared. Have a living thing in your space one way or another. I think that's very important. And I think find some place where you could go both in your home and outside your home that feels like home, and including if you could build any play into it, it's essential. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I'm going to be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m., my friends. My thanks to you, all of you, and my apologies to the callers I couldn't get to. But you can always send me an email, armand@thepositivemind.com, and I'll be happy to hear and correspond with you. Short correspondence, of course. And I will be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m., my friends. ¶¶
This is Michael G. Haskins with a shout-out to all WBAI members. From now until July 15, we are taking nominations for the WBAI Local Station Board. All paid-up members of the station can place their names in nomination. The Local Station Board oversees management of WBAI. It's elected by the members in a ballot vote. We need an active and committed board representing the broad range of our listener community to help take this station to the next level. To get all the details, go to www.wbai.org or call 212-209-2828. That's wbai.org and 212-209-2828. Ask for Ethan. He's the election supervisor.
On Monday, June 29th, between 9 and 11 p.m., Joy of Resistance is proud to present a live, on-air performance of the acclaimed play, Words of Choice. Consisting of 14 short, powerful pieces on a woman's right to choose, including real-life experiences with contraception, abortion, sexuality, and childbirth. The play weaves together words of writers as diverse as June Jordan, Kathy Najimy, and Justice Harry Blackmun. It's been performed in 20 states, often on the front lines of struggle. Kansas, Colorado, South Dakota. And after the performance, we'll interview creator Cindy Cooper and the cast on the responses they got in these anti-choice states. So join the Joy Resistance, where on Monday, June 29th, 9 to 11 p.m., the play's the thing. Find out why one audience member said, Kansas will never be the same. For more information, go to wordsofchoice.org. We won't go back.
There is a desire to kind of gentrify the programming.
Now, as far as the gag rule goes, well, it's a reminder of what the regulations that govern our license are.
Yes, things are looking good now, but we're not out of the woods. As opposed to being 5 feet under, we're only 3 feet under. Now, what we're looking and working towards is being 20 feet above. That's the goal.
So I urge you, the listeners, to understand how we got here, and without hatred.
The next meeting of the WBAI Local Station Board will take place on Thursday, June 25th at 7 p.m. at the Judson Memorial Church Assembly Hall, 239 Thompson Street between West 3rd and Washington Square South. Take the A, C, E, F, or V train to West 4th Street or the number 1 train to Christopher Street. The location is wheelchair accessible.
Management seems to be going in the right direction. They're showing an openness to new ideas.
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.